This week on Making Contact.
I think that was like the point where I like we're doing something important with this play. We're not only changing our minds, not only making it so people can be more tolerant of this subject, but just the whole country in a way.
The struggles of undocumented youth in the U.S. often fly under the radar of the mainstream media. But with the tools of creative expression and the power of social media, a new generation of young immigrants is making sure their voices are heard.
I know how to draw. Like, that's what I know what to do best. This is something that if I get deported or if I get arrested, nobody can take away from me.
On this edition, young undocumented artists speak their truth as the world listens. I'm Jen Chien, and this is Making Contact, a program connecting people, vital ideas, and important information. There are an estimated 11 million immigrants living in the United States without legal residency status. 10% of them are under the age of 18. 65,000 undocumented students graduate from U.S. high schools every year, many of them honor students, athletes, or aspiring professionals. But because of their immigration status, they face barriers to higher education and employment, and many live with the fear of deportation. While talk of immigration reform makes its way through Capitol Hill, a musical about undocumented teens in California brings the experiences of young immigrants to the stage. Emily Wilson has the story.
Life is like a piñata.
An earth-shaped piñata.
It's true, people. She's not making it up.
At the Marsh Theater in San Francisco, in an upstairs room with a stage and a bunch of folding chairs, a group of teens are rehearsing a play, In and Out of Shadows, which tells the stories of undocumented students.
I bought new batteries for my Willitos tape recorder. You want to hear it?
So my character is Juan 2. There's another guy named Juan 1. It's a really fun character, especially the name, because you go, oh, which Juan?
That's Homero Rosas. He's loved acting since playing Charlie in Charlie and the Chocolate Factory in fourth grade. He's 17 now, a senior in high school, and for the last few years, he's been part of the Marsh Youth Theater, which integrates drama, music, and dance. It's open to all kids from 4 to 21 without audition and regardless of financial status. Rosas came here from Mexico when he was 6. He wasn't really aware of his status until he wanted to apply for a paid internship, and his parents told him he couldn't because he didn't have a Social Security card.
Like, we were at this discussion on the kitchen table, and I was just crying, and I'm like, you're telling me just because I wasn't born here, I can't do this, but I physically can, I mentally can, I emotionally, I'm strong enough. You're telling me it's just this thing, it just pissed me off, basically. It just made me very angry. Those were the first emotions that came in.
Rosa says after that, his grades, formerly all A's and B's, went down, and he grew depressed and couldn't concentrate. But he didn't give up.
My parents told me something that I kind of, like, can't forget, which was, hope is the strongest emotion of all. And without hope, you're not living.
The lack of options for Rosas and other undocumented kids in the theater group concerned Emily Kleen, the director of the Marsh Youth Theater. She wanted to put on a play highlighting the struggles of undocumented youth. Kleen came up with the idea of the young actors interviewing undocumented teens and transcribing the interviews. They had normal teenage concerns, prom, wanting to wear the right clothes, have the right boyfriend or girlfriend. But the interviews yielded more, she says.
Then they would come up with something like, I'd love to go to France, but I can't. I'll never be able to do that. Something like that. Or I'd love to go up, you know, to the East Coast for college, but there's no way. I can't apply for financial aid. Or there's this great organization that gives internships out, but they won't give it to undocumented students. So they have the same desires, but there was always this kind of dead end as they began to dream about different things.
Kleen's daughter teaches at Leadership High School in Richmond, a town about 30 minutes from San Francisco. The actors interviewed kids in an AB 540 club there. AB 540 is a California law that allows students who graduate from high school here to pay in-state tuition. Leadership High School sits in a low-income residential neighborhood surrounded by a chain-link fence. In the play, kids talk about the pollution, violence, and constant police helicopters in Richmond.
Where I live, in the Iron Triangle, the police helicopters are out every night.
College counselor Laura Chavez advises the AB 540 Club. Her office is in a portable, with college posters plastered on all the walls. Being interviewed by another teen was a powerful experience for her students, she says.
We've talked a lot about stepping outside of your comfort zone and really sharing your story, not just so that they can use it for scholarships or use it for their own personal development, but to really help other people. And so I kind of push them slowly to be comfortable to be able to interview.
I remember one young woman saying to me, goes, make it real.
Gary Soto wrote In and Out of Shadows.
And I thought, okay, I'm going to let that just settle in my mind, make it real. So I was looking for material that was realistic, and all of it was realistic, but something that was poignant and stood out.
Soto is a well-known author and poet. His grandparents came over from Mexico, and he grew up in California's Central Valley, in Fresno. Much of his work, a lot of it for young people, deals with working-class people there. To write the play, he took the 300 pages of interviews the Marshu Theater actors transcribed of nearly 40 people and carved a narrative out of them.
They laughed at my baby sister because she had silver teeth caps. How mean! And they asked what rancho we were from, remember? You know what? I am rancho, soy rústica.
In the play, students are getting ready for an AB 540 conference. They are writing their personal statements, and Soto uses this device to tell their stories. A kid who came through the sewers from Mexico to get here. A boy who refused to give the name of his cousin who was documented rather than his own. A 14-year-old whose mother gets sent back at the border.
I'm just 14, 14. I haven't even had my quinceañera. I'm just a girl.
I had a hard time because I used to stutter. I don't know why. And when I stuttered, people could pick out my accent.
This character is partly based on Mija Arriaga, a member of the AB 540 Club, who stutters and wants to be a chef like her dad. Arriaga feels hopeful now because of Obama's deferred action plan, which allows for a deportation reprieve for some students. This makes a big difference to her, she says.
Because 4 years ago, my brother was a senior here, and then he got accepted to the school that I want to, but then that he couldn't go because he didn't have the money, and then that he couldn't work to like get the money because he was an immigrant. But then now that this opportunity came, I'm taking advantage of it big time.
AB 540 Club advisor Laura Chavez says the students she works with can't afford to go to college. Without a social security number, they can't work, and many college scholarships aren't open to them. She helps them figure out ways to raise money for college, as well as learning to navigate socially in a world without papers.
They literally have to come out constantly and tell them, like, no, I don't have a social security number. This is what I am. This is what I'm not. And so that's their biggest struggle, like voicing their opinion, advocating for themselves, gaining that voice for themselves is their biggest struggle.
Gary Soto said he was impressed by how the students speak up for themselves.
They're being very vocal in their political stance of where they are in their lives. And so that is refreshing, you know, to see that it's not the senior people like me or even people even younger or even older, but it's rather themselves who are actually taking the initiative to change policy in this country.
They're going to try to deport her first and then come and get us.
No, no, they won't. We'll move. We'll go underground.
No, Felix, we're going to get loud.
Being undocumented isn't just a Latino issue, and Soto wanted to be sure and portray that in his play. There's a character from Indonesia whose parents almost get deported, and a main storyline deals with a Filipino family.
You said you're from the Philippines. This is what men and boys play.
Diane Palaganis plays the mother. The character is based on her own mother, whose lawyer filed the papers too late for her to change her status and get a green card. Palaganis studies theater at City College of San Francisco. She says she has had to turn down acting jobs because she doesn't have a Social Security card.
You know, people don't realize that it's not just a political movement. This is a psychological effect for all of us. You know that you don't have the opportunity, so you're never going to take them again. And it's hard to take risks. It's you don't become brave anymore. So then now, I love doing this show, but after I come out of the show, I know I'm going to be in the same predicament again.
In and Out of Shadows offers more than sad stories. It's a musical with plenty of singing, dancing, and humor. This gives audiences a non-threatening, entertaining way to hear about the issue of undocumented youth, Chavez says.
I also think that politically, we are in the right time to talk about immigration, to talk about undocumented students, to talk about this topic itself. I think it's about time that we're doing that. And if we use theater and we use art as a vehicle to start that conversation, then why not? It's the right time.
A play can't change policy, but the young people involved in the musical hope that it will be a first step by changing minds and bringing their stories out of the shadows. For Making Contact, I'm Emily Wilson.
You're listening to Making Contact, a production of the National Radio Project. Because of listeners like you, this show is distributed for free to radio stations in the US, Canada, Australia, and South Africa. To find out how to support us, download shows, or to get our podcasts, go to radioproject.org. Like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter. Our handle is making_contact.
It ain't easy. La vida es difícil. I'm struggling, fighting to decide if I'm gonna make a living or try and build a life, cause very often it ain't the same crossroad. The American dream's getting outsourced, so the only thing I got is my brazos. Pero ya no puedo porque lo que gano.
You're listening to a song by ESL, the stage name of Jesus Iniguez. Iniguez is one of the founders of Dreamers Adrift, a creative project about, by, and for undocumented youth. Iniguez, along with friends Julio Salgado, Fernando Romero, and Daisy Hernandez, started the project in 2010. Inspired by civil disobedience actions of other undocumented youth fighting to pass the DREAM Act, they wanted to create a platform to talk about their own experiences. All four had recently graduated from college, and in addition to the burdens facing any grad in today's economy, they also had to contend with the immigration system. They started channeling their frustrations by making videos, mostly in a series called Undocumented and Awkward.
Awkward!
The series used humor as a way to illustrate common awkward or embarrassing situations that young undocumented people face. In one video, a young man goes to meet a blind date at a club, but can't get in with his consular ID.
Hello? Yeah, so I'm here. Are you inside? Yeah, it sounds really loud in there. Yeah, thing is, I already tried to go inside, but the bouncer wouldn't let me. No, I am over 21. It's just, he wouldn't take my ID. It's not a state ID.
A college student's immigration status is unceremoniously announced in public by a financial aid worker.
Okay, so do you have financial aid?
I don't have financial aid. I'm an AB 540 student. AB 540? AB 540.
Yeah. Okay. Do you know what an AB 540 student is?
Those are students who are illegal.
Illegal?
Illegal.
Oh, so you're an illegal student?
No, I'm not an illegal student. It's not how you say it. It's actually undocumented student, AB 540 student.
Okay. After the success of the videos, Dreamers Adrift created a website which soon became a venue for other young undocumented artists to share their work. The project has fed into the growing movement for visibility and justice for immigrants without papers, with a unique focus on creative expression. Here's an excerpt of a recent collaboration between poet Yosimar Reyes and visual artist Julio Salgado, whose drawings accompany the text.
Why is it that every time I think about my home, my heart stops at the idea of living in poverty, when in reality, I have been living below the poverty line my whole life? There's a social construction in my head that America is better, that America will grant me freedom, that America will grant me proper education, that America is a place of justice, when the reality is that I have never seen the fruit of any of these promises. We're still at the same place since we arrived, under attack, caged, profiled, and subjugated to unjust laws. I am thinking about how damaging it is to label my spirit, my essence, undocumented, taking something so minimal from the physical world and have it manifest in my body.
Yosimar, Julio, and Jesus recently visited Making Contact Studio to talk about art, activism, and documenting the undocumented.
My name is Julio Salgado. I'm 29 years old, and I live in Berkeley, California.
My name is Yosimar Reyes. I'm 24 years old, and I currently reside in Eastside San Jose, but I'm originally from Guerrero, Mexico.
My name is Jesus Iniguez. I'm 29 years old, and I live in Berkeley, California. I think originally when we first started the Dreamers Adrift project, there was a whole lot of events happening at the time, and this was around 2009, 2010. There was a lot of push for comprehensive immigration reform and the Dream Act, and there was that split, and there was a whole lot of hard feelings and different strategies as to how to best widen the narrative. We were talking about legalizing all undocumented people in the nation, or just a select few, which in 2010 were the Dreamers, right?
Meaning like the sort of model student, good American right. type of...
And so I'd go to all these events, all these fundraisers, and they would have two or three undocumented people tell their story. And it was always a very sad story. People always wanted to hear how tragic their border crossing story is. And absolutely, every single person in the undocumented movement, every single undocumented person has their own unique story. But for us, it became a thing where we wanted to put a more positive spin on it, and something having to do with self-determination and something empowering, where, yes, there's this really messed up situation that we're all dealing with, and these are just the cards that we were dealt with. And that's just the situation as it is, and we can either sit around and cry about it, or we could own it and push for something better and something grander, right?
For me, I've been drawing since I was a little kid. And, you know, when I was in college, the first two semesters that I was an art major, I didn't find myself. I saw the art that I was studying, you know, like European art, and not really, I was trying to figure out how I was going to pay for college. And so, you know, I was like, this is not for me. Art is not for me. Art is not a place where I'm going to make money. You know, I don't have parents with, you know, big bank accounts that can support my art, you know, so it was a no. And so I pursued journalism because I want, you know, I was like, you know, I could tell a story. I want to be able to tell a story. But when a lot of this stuff happening in that, because for me, 2010 was like a big year that was super influential for me personally. And, you know, I found a reason to go back to sketching and go back to drawing, go back to, you know, to use art as a tool to document what was going on. Because at the time when a lot of this stuff was happening, the media was still getting it wrong. The media was still, they would go take a picture of the event happening, and they would print it, get paid, and move on. But for us, it's like, you're leaving, but we're still undocumented. Our parents are still documented. And so we felt the need to create media by undocumented people. And this came in posters and, you know, videos and owning ourselves. Like, it's like, okay, this things that's happening, it's historic, and you only want a picture for it, an article for it, but you're gonna leave, and we need to figure out to make sure that this stays, this gets documented by us, because this is affecting us. And so I think that you know, it was really important that, you know, that we put it out there, that people saw that it was us creating it.
For me, my art, like, I don't think I can write about something that I don't know. I can't, like, I only write about subjects and themes that I'm aware of. And I do it consciously. The poems that I produce and the videos that I produce and whatever I put out there, I do it being aware of the fact that it's it needs to be reflected of what I've been through. And also knowing that I have a responsibility as a person, as an artist, to impact other people. And for me, the audience that I always aim for to impact is youth and kids. Kind of like, I always think of my writing as like, if I'm leaving a trail for another little queer, brown, undocumented boy in the block like me. Who had to deal with all these pressures and all these and fight all these traumas at a young age. I don't know if I would call it activism. I would just call it like I think everybody as a person or as an artist, you kind of have a responsibility to people. And if you're making art, you know, like high end art or just to live off of it, well, props to you and good luck to you. But that's not my reality. I come from a different place. You know, I come from a place where you treasure every minute you got to pen down a poem. So
I'm wondering if you can also talk a little bit about how you see being out as a queer person intersects with being out with your immigration status, or if you see either a philosophical connection there or just like a personal feeling around it?
With my queerness, I think I've always, it's an essential part of who I am. And I think the most of the work that I do, the framework within the poems that I write or the themes of it has been very based on kind of carrying a message to younger folks who kind of have the similar background of how I was raised. So I think with me, it's always like my queerness is something that I celebrate and I'm really proud of it. Before coming out, I think my queerness was something really scary and frightening because I realized that all the things people have told me that were bad, that's what I kind of am. So I had to switch that kind of understanding and realize that in the end, all those bad things that they told me, it's really a blessing. Because I've learned to, it opened up my eyes to a world, a different world, a world of that connected me to a lot of people. And in if anything, the intersecting theme of being queer and undocumented is the fact you're living in this kind of like crossroads, but you have the abilities to survive.
You know, in 2010, when there was the first civil disobedience by undocumented youth, you know, three of the four. Were queer and undocumented. So that to me was like, wow, you know, at the time I had just gotten out of college and I was like feeling sorry for myself for not being able to work. But here there, you know, you had like youth who were doing, you know, difference and really changing the narrative of coming out. And because up to that point, we had been told, do not come out, don't say anything. And if you do, give your out, you know, don't give your real name because, you know, and so what that was doing was really not putting a face to the issue, because we talk about immigration, we talk about numbers, you know, these are people. And so what they did, it's putting a face to it. And so to me, it was like, damn, they're undocumented and they're queer and, you know, they're really owning it. And so I really wanted to talk, you know, to honor that, you know, I started making illustrations depicting that, you know, that intersectionality. And then I heard that term undocu-queer and just putting it in a poster, putting an idea into folks who a lot of the times when they think, you know, immigrant issues are not queer issues and vice versa, when you're in queer spaces and you only talk about gay marriage and we only talk about, you know, joining the military, it's like there's more to us than that.
Do you feel like your art and your activism go hand in hand? Or to put another way, do you think that you would have pursued an artistic path had you not had some activist or political needs or desires?
Sometimes that's just what you know what to do best. And it's like, you know, there's people who know how to organize a rally and put it together. If there's people who can, you know, canvas, if there's people who can, you know, have the emotional capacity and the guts to sit down and do a civil disobedience, like everybody has a, you know, everything, something to put into whatever, if you want to call it a movement, whatever, you know. But to me, it's like, I know how to draw. Like, that's what I know what to do best. This is something that if I get deported or if I get arrested, nobody can take away from me, you know? And so it's knowing when you know what to do, knowing that you know how to do something and doing it well. and you know, make sure that you nurture that craft and hopefully use it for, you know, for a good cause or a good thing, you know. Yeah.
And then art is a lot of work, and just like canvassing and organizing, that's a whole lot of work. It takes a whole lot of talent, a lot of dedication, and a lot of heart. And I'm not a good organizer. I've tried it, and it's not for me. I've tried admin work. I've been involved with nonprofits. And for me, my calling is communicating. And that's what I'm central to. And that's how I feel I can communicate and work in the utmost of honesty to my situation.
And I think art has always been part of our culture. I mean, if you look at the trends, even within the United States, the trends of people making art and what's trending now, it's always become from people who are disenfranchised and people who really feel that we may not have institutional power, we may not be in political office, and we may not have access to a lot of these spaces, but we have access to our own voice and our own narratives.
For me personally, it's about changing grabbing those things that are negative, like the idea that we're undocumented and we're queer and we're criminals and we're deviants and we're not supposed to, you know, even discuss it, and turning them around and make it a positive thing or not necessarily a positive thing, but a thing where you don't put your head down. And to me, that's the, and you can get away with that in art. You can get away with creating this, you know, imagining something different. We can talk about open borders and all we want, but, you know, talking about UndocuQueer, but that's not a law. You know, UndocuQueer is not a law. It's those are ideas that are being put out there. And I think we need to keep doing that. You know, artists need to continue to challenge that. Because we're not, nobody's perfect. No, you know, those politicians are trying to call us criminals and saying that we need to follow law. They're not perfect either. So nobody can ever achieve that. And you know, we need to stop this begging for acceptance, because nobody's going to fully accept you if you don't accept yourself. You know, it sounds cliche, whatever, but you need to love yourself first. And I think art allows that to show that, you know, to show this idea.
You're talking about showing a fuller sense of one's identity.
Correct. Yeah. And you know, again, we're just showing you with undocumented and queer. Those are two things that are affecting us. But there's so many things that need to be talked about by the people living them, because it's really important that as people going through those issues, you know, figure out ways to create and to ride to, you know, none of us, you know, went to school for this. You know, all we do is basically, you know, tell ourselves, you know, be our, you know, read our diaries out loud. You know, that's all you get with us.
That was Yosimar Reyes, Julio Salgado, and Jesus Iñiguez of Dreamers Adrift. To see more of their videos, music, and art, find them online at dreamersadrift.com. And that's it for this edition of Making Contact. Check out our website, radioproject.org, to get a podcast, download past shows, or make a difference by supporting our work. Like Making Contact on Facebook or follow us on Twitter. Our handle is making_contact. The Making Contact team includes Lisa Redman, Andrew Stelzer, George Lavender, Irene Flores, Juanita Carol Young, Lisa Bartfi, Salima Hamarani, Dorian Roberts, Dan Turner, Larry Piltz, and Barbara Barnett. Special thanks to the Left Tilt Fund and the Berwick Daigle Family Foundation for helping to fund this show. I'm Jen Chien. Thanks for listening to Making Contact.